This podcast is proudly sponsored by Yukonuba Sporting Dog. If you want to get everything your dog's got, you need nutrition that holds nothing back. To help unleash your dog's maximum potential, check out the new Yukonuba Premium Performance lineup at yukonubasportingdog.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Dude, I'm sore as hell. I went and got my second COVID vaccine today.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe I was sore because I just been like, you know, just trotting around my yard and it's like all muddy and wet and I'm wearing rubber boots that are probably just like ergonomically terrible. And I'm like, you know, right now I chose to teach these dogs how to heal this week. You know what I mean? So like, mm-hmm. I'm just like marching basically. And so I was like, damn, man, my feet can hurt. And then I realized, like, I got that COVID vaccine. And, like, one of the biggest symptoms is, like, you know, you're just, like, your body is sore.
Yeah. That's how that's one of my symptoms from COVID. It was, like, and it wasn't even soreness. It was, like, in deep pain in my bones. Like, yeah. It was deeper than just, like, you know, you work out and your muscles are sore. It was, like. It's just a hard to explain pain. I hadn't had something like that before.
All right, you ready to roll?
I'm ready if you're ready.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Here we are for episode number 24, where we will be stepping off into introduction of the blind retrieve. And with that being said, what brought us to this topic is really Dominic's first week on the job or second week on the job?
I'm finishing up my second week.
Finishing up his second week on the job, and he's training with a professional trainer now. And also with that, Sailor's kind of diving off into the blind retrieve. I know he's got a couple of other dogs he's working with that. We want to go through kind of those first steps into transitioning into running blinds. So, Dominic, what have you learned this past couple weeks?
I never thought I'd be able to distinguish two different black labs.
Yeah, that takes some skill, man.
And, you know, I'm to the point where, you know, this dog is this dog, that dog's that dog, that dog's that dog. Meanwhile, they're all, you know, male black labs. And, you know, it used to be a black lab was a black lab. And, you know, until you're working around 16 of them, you don't notice those little nuances.
That's funny you say that. I've been training with the same guy for, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 months. And I always joke with him that the only dog of his that I recognize is the one with the dock tail. So of the black dogs, he's got a bunch of other dogs as well. But of the black ones, I joke, you know, I can only tell that one apart because he doesn't have a tail.
It's crazy how I feel like it's, you know, like twins. You just learn personalities along with little like subtle differences. Yeah, I never thought I'd be able to tell the difference. Right. I thought, you know, God help me, they better all have different color collars.
Oh man, I've seen a trainer grab the wrong dog off the truck and get to the line and say their name, and the dog didn't go, and he looked down at it. Oh, that's not Lucy. I had to go trade him out. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. And he said, if you think that's funny, try sending one home to the wrong owner.
I always wonder if that's ever happened to somebody where they, you know, they entered or they ran the wrong dog at a hunt test.
Yeah. Why is that dog already wet? Yeah. I mean, it probably could happen. I mean, I'm sure it had to, you know, yeah, maybe hopefully by accident, but yeah, I could see it happening.
Well, there's never any mistake in that curly haired black dog that runs some of these drills now.
What do you have to say about running blinds.
Much like anything in dog training, it's a stepwise function. So, you know, the blind is kind of that next step. Once you finish up force fetch, then you start adding in new pieces like three-handed casting. You start adding in some pile work. And then once you start to get through pile work, then we start to incorporate the T, where we really marry together those concepts that we initially taught on three-handed casting along with the concepts of, you know, running pile work.
So let me stop you there before you get too far into this, because we have to remember that some of our listeners, they might actually be, you know, running blinds for the first time or looking to start running blinds. So what is three-handed casting? Can you explain that?
Yeah. So three-handed casting, some people call it directional fetch, and some people consider directional fetch a different concept. But in essence, three-handed casting is you want your dog to be able to take a right-handed back, left-handed back, right over, and left over. So you're essentially teaching three different directions.
Yeah. What does that look like? You know, how have you been doing it the past couple of weeks? Because I know there's many ways to skin a cat.
There's about a million different ways to go through three-handed casting. I've done it in, you know, with Sailor. I've done it a few different ways. So very, very start of it, it's just with one bumper about a foot or 2 feet away from her. And then, you know, if it's to her left, so my right as she's facing me, I'll just give, you know, stick my arm out and say fetch, and kind of give that little direction over to the bumper. She'll pick it up, bring her back to in front of me, facing me, get the bumper from her, and then keep working that same side over and over. Make sure she has a nice foundation there. She understands what I'm asking. And then we start to add in, you know, we take that one bumper and we move it behind her, or we start with it behind her and then we add the over. And you start to incorporate, or you start to teach them those three main directions: behind you, to your left, to your right. And you kind of let that build on itself to the point where, you know, you're not only using one bumper. Now you have, you know, two bumpers in front of them, and it's a right back or a right over, or a left back and a left over. And then once you kind of have that concept nailed down, then you have three bumpers by the dog, and you're able to really get some good training in there with them, to where they're not just anticipating, they're not auto casting. You're able to teach them that when I stick out my right arm, you're going to your left.
Right. So along the way, I'm assuming you're starting off with just one bumper to one side. So you can give that overcast. So in this transitional phase, you're not going to want to have, you know, little piles all over the place in the beginning, to where they can screw up. You kind of add that after you've built, you know, some sort of control, some sort of repetitions, right?
Exactly. You know, you definitely want to simplify it.
So, you know, during this three-handed casting for you, how far are you stretching out in what you would call three-handed casting before you would call it, hey, we're running T now?
Well, so three-handed casting kind of it's just a small scale drill where, you know, bumpers never end up more than, you know, 5 to maximum 10 yards away from the dog. So, gotcha. You know, it's just a light underhand toss away from where you're standing, if you're standing with the dog facing directly at your feet. But, you know, that's just more or less teaching the dog the direction. You know, if I'm pointing this direction, go that direction. If I point that direction, then go that direction. And it's kind of, it builds some teamwork in there. I think T is a little bit more complex, because in order to run T, you know, you have to incorporate sending the dog back, hitting a whistle sit, and then taking a cast over when they already know that there's a pile behind them or a pile to their left and their right, but I want them to just go to their right.
Right. So I feel like we're getting we could be complicating things right here. So if you could give me, let's start. Let's say that the intro to blind work starts after force fetch is complete.
Mm-hmm.
That could be our starting point. So what's the first thing that you're doing after force fetch?
Either, directional fetch or three-handed casting, whatever you want to call it. Some people will go ahead and start out with, more distance. With Sailor, I started off with short distance, so I could just say fetch. And it was just similar to the walking fetch fundamentals that she had built up. I wasn't sending her 15 yards when I said fetch. Usually there would be a bumper right next to her, right in front of her when I said fetch while we were walking through. So we carry over that that concept into three-handed casting. So if I place a bumper, a couple feet over from her and say over, or if I say fetch, she knows, okay, I'm just going to turn to this way and pick up that bumper. And, like I said, some people stretch it out a little bit more. I started with the bumpers in a little bit tighter, but it kind of depends on what program you're following. And, if you have a good reason for stretching those bumpers out, then by all means, go for it. Sometimes dogs do a little bit better on that because, it loosens them up. We go through this grind of force fetch with the dog that, it can get little tedious at times and little taxing for a dog's mind to do the same thing over and over and over again, pressure on, pressure off. It turns into a grind. And so when you start putting bumpers a little bit further away from them and letting them go run down that bumper and pick it up and bring it back to you, it helps loosen them up a little bit more than, having it right next to them and start telling them fetch again, because then that goes back to the grind. But
right. Yeah. I think, adding some movement after that process is refreshing for both you, because you know that you're moving forward, and for the dog, because they get to actually move around a little bit. And I think that mm-hmm. both of these working dogs are not typically, too fond of just sitting still all the time. I know that comes whenever we get to, actual hunting, especially if you do my kind of hunting where you never kill anything. But I think these dogs
bird watching
would prefer to run, if they could at least move mm-hmm. around a little bit, mm-hmm. expel some of that energy and just get out of just the mental anguish a little bit and more into the athleticism and some exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I actually don't do three-handed casting like that. The first step for me after force fetch, if you want to, some people might consider this part of force fetch, but I move on to groundwork. And with that, kind of a little transitional thing that I do is what I call carrot fetch. I don't know what everyone else calls it. I don't know if that's an actual term or something that I just made up, but basically after we've fully completed force fetch in the still position, I will start moving with the force, with the carrot, the bumper, basically dangling in front of the dog's face like a cartoon you would with Bugs Bunny on the back of an ox with a carrot dangling in front of his head. So basically the dog starts moving forward, you say fetch, and they get a little movement. And mm-hmm. it goes a little lower and a little lower and a little lower until it's on the ground and you're holding it and they're picking it up off the ground. And then you get to the point that they're picking it up without your hand on it. And so with that, we've initiated that momentum and we go into that's walking fetch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm keeping a straight line now and I'm just expanding the distance. So we're going into force to pile, and I do what I call ladder fetch. And basically it's a ladder of bumpers leading up to the pile to basically extend them a little further and a little further. Let's say it's just 10 yards apart to get a decent distance that they're running to a pile. Once we've established that pile, then we can back up from the pile and make for a longer force to pile. after that, I'm thinking about whistle stops. Hopefully, during your obedience, none of this is possible if you haven't gone through every step along the way. You can't skip steps and just start doing this if you haven't gone through your obedience, your sit, stay, hear, heel, place, your collar conditioning, your hold, force fetch, all that stuff. My first time that I ask a dog to stop is actually on the way back from the pile. That way I can use my body and my posture to get them to stop. And eventually, once they've built that up and they're doing well with it, I will stop them on the way out to the pile as well. I then do T. So for me, T, I start off basically sitting them on the pitcher's mound and casting to first base, second base, third base, not at the same time, one at a time, and then eventually I combine them all together, and that's how they learn their different directions.
Mm-hmm.
I do back up to home plate and send the dog basically to the pitcher's mound and start stopping them and run more of like a traditional, a real T as well. But we've kind of established that little launch pad right there in the middle. And eventually we can stop them anywhere in that line to second base and cast to either direction. So you could do a double T out of that, whatever setup your program calls for. I run reverse T. After that, I think my dogs are ready for pattern blinds or multiple blinds. With pattern blinds for me, I'm making it clear as day. Just like we did up to this point, make everything as simple as you can and worry about complicating things after they've fully grasped everything. Make it to where they cannot fail. So I'm talking, I do white poles with black and white bumpers on fresh mowed grass. Like, I want the dogs to see what they're running to, and it's not necessarily a blind. If they have any issues with them, walk them out there and show them where it is. Drop bumpers on the pile, whatever you have to do to start establishing them looking out there and seeing the pile or that particular blind until they get the hang of it. We try to make it easy.
Yeah, I'd probably, draw the line from the intro to blind running after we finish up T, and reverse T or being able to cast with the bumper in the dog's mouth still, whichever you want to refer to it as. I think that's kind of the transition point to ideally start to go into swim by, but that can be a completely different episode for Operation Gundog here. But that whole process, I think that's where being able to read a dog, it's always imperative to be able to read your dog's body language and understand what they need at that time and how they need to progress through things. But blind work, I think, takes a lot of attention to the dog, because you don't want to start introducing whistle sits on a dog that's still unsure of running to the pile. For me, whistle sits are introduced heading to the pile. So I want a dog that has good momentum and a dog that ideally has already been forced to pile. So when we start introducing those whistle sits, if they sit and I give another cast and they stay seated, I'm able to, pull out that tool out of my tool belt and send them back. But you don't want to progress too fast and create a dog that's unsure and has confidence issues, because that's going to translate into a dog that's going to pop, or it's going to flare, or it's going to do other weird things in that process. You want to be able to build some momentum there and make sure the dog is comfortable with, where that pile is. You don't want to go out there and, the first blind you run with your dog is just this cold blind into the middle of nowhere. And the first time you ever say back, there's pressure with it, and they don't know what you're asking of them. I think you want to build that pile, establish where that pile is. If that means, you know, you're 5 feet away from it and chuck a bumper and, you know, hold a steady tab or hold the collar and then say back and kind of give a little nudge or, you know, whatever it takes for your dog to get over there. If that means, you know, saying fetch a couple of times. But moving too quickly can create, you know, different confidence issues, especially if you're trying to whistle sit a dog that doesn't have momentum, then you're really going to start to create some issues there.
Absolutely. So, if I can chime in with the whistle stops, you know, once you get to that point where you're whistle stopping your dog on the way out, it's important to read your dog and don't whistle stop them every time that they're running to the pile. Otherwise they think that they're going to whistle stop every time. And you don't want that. You don't want a dog that's not running confidently to the pile. So,
and that's another good point to vary where you whistle stop them.
Right.
Especially if you have an intelligent dog. I'm sure even a dog that might not be the most intelligent is, you know, really driven. If you whistle stop them 5 yards away from the pile every time or 15 yards, it's just at that one patch of grass, you whistle stop them. They're going to pick up on that pattern and they're going to say, okay, I'm going to run to this spot. I'm going to sit. You want to make sure you vary things as much as possible. Give them a lot of different looks. Whistle sit them a foot from the pile and then, you know, give them the back. They return, send them all the way to the pile. Whistle sit them like 5 yards from you. You know.
So right now, I think that the way you're explaining it, I think that you're training a slower dog. And whenever I explain it, I think that I'm training a faster dog. So if I were to use Bonnie, for instance, like she's not going to stop 1 foot from the pile.
That's true.
I think this does kind of bring up like you train a fast dog slow and a slow dog fast. And so if you have a fast dog, like you might have to hit that same spot a couple times so that they kind of know, hey, this is where I stop, but you don't want to keep hitting the same spot. That's just for you establishing that, hey, we are going to stop. But with that being said, you're continually reading your dog and how they react to everything. You're reading their body language and they're kind of giving you the answer. I know that you were telling me that you had a dog that was doing some force fetch today and you had a pretty good read. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, it was just the location we were doing force fetch on the ground at. It's right near where we do walking fetch. And, you know, we were transitioning to that dog to the point in force fetch where it's picking up a bumper off the ground. And, you know, we had just gotten to the point with that dog and force fetch that it was picking things up off the ground without my hand needing to be there and things like that. And, you know, got the dog ready for another rip and it started pulling me over towards the walking fetch bumper that was a couple feet away. I said, all right, let's go that way. And the dog picked up that bumper. Good dog. Took it out of his mouth and put it back down. Went right back for it. I said, all right, we're going to do walking fetch. So we transitioned, you know, it wasn't in, you know, that day's plan because that day I was hoping to get some good reps and be able to, you know, have a dog that succeeded in being able to pick up a bumper off the ground for, you know, for about the first time. But because that's where that dog was ready for, we were able to get into walk and fetch that day and, you know, came out with a lot of clean reps because that dog, you know, was able to move around a little bit more. Like we talked about loosening up, even though that's a portion of the force fetch process and it can be a grind too, being able to, you know, move, you know, 5 feet or 6 feet between bumpers or, you know, get that little bit of change of scenery instead of being in this one spot, hearing fetch, good, fetch, fetch, good. You know, that grind that we get into, that dog was being really productive. It was showing a lot of effort today. And that's just one of those reads that the dog, you know, gave me a big sign saying, let's go do walk and fetch today. And so, you know, we went and did walk and fetch today, and we'll do walk and fetch with that dog tomorrow, and we'll continue to progress through that until that dog's ready for three-handed casting.
So, you know, one thing I was thinking about when you were talking about the grind is you have to remember, you know, we just talked about reading your dog, but you have to remember to, you know, with reading your dog, you have to find that balance too. You know, if you get too far into this blind stuff, then you can have some issues if you're not mixing in marks. So I think that's important, as important as anything when it comes to reading your dog through this process. You know, if you go 2 months of just running blinds, your dog's probably going to pop on a mark. You know, if it's a more difficult mark, your dog's going to, I don't know, may forget how to mark. You know, they might think that you're in complete control all the time because you never give them that freedom of a mark. So you have to read your dog through that. You also have to read your dog through what attitudes they're having towards blinds. Is your dog walking to blinds, or is your dog hauling butt to blind? Does your dog need a little pick me up, maybe a little live bird action or a live flyer? Or does your dog need a little more grind to have a little more control? So mm-hmm. That's kind of what we're talking about when we mention reading your dog.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, if you're looking at a dog that's walking to the pile consistently, no matter what distance you set them up for success at, you know, you might be looking at, is this a confidence issue, or do we have a hole in force fetch somewhere where, you know, it doesn't understand that there's a little bit of urgency here? And well, you know, there's a lot of troubleshooting you could do with that, but you definitely need to know why your dog does certain things, which really just comes with reading your dog. And right. You need to be confident and know you're truly following your program. Because if you're not confident in what you did at force fetch, and then you come to three-handed casting and they're on a new drill and they start doing weird things, well, if you left holes in your force fetch program and you come over here and try to do, you know, ear pinch or whatever it might be on that three-handed casting drill to get that dog to pick up the pumper, you're not getting out of the, you're coming to three-handed casting with the goal of starting to get that dog to understand that you're giving them directions, and to head that direction, they'll find a bumper or a bird, right, or whatever it might be. But if you're coming to that drill and you're having to do a lot of force fetch work, you're not getting out of that drill what it's intended to be. You know, that's right. Not intended to be a force fetch drill. That's why we iron all that stuff out through the force fetch process.
Right.
So you need to definitely keep in mind, you know, with the drill you're running, what are you trying to get out of it? And if you're digging yourself a hole on, you know, something that shouldn't be on that drill, maybe we need to iron that out somewhere else and say, we're done with pile work today. Your obedience is trash. We're going to go work on obedience in a different part of the yard. You know, maybe you're to the point where you want to whistle stop your dog, but maybe you didn't introduce the whistle sit during basic obedience as a puppy. And so that dog doesn't know what the whistle means. Okay. Well, we're not going to be able to get out of that program, right, that drill. Well, we need to. So we need to go back and make sure that we have those fundamentals or those building blocks that we need to be able to go out there and get the most out of, right, pile work.
Everything that you've done up to this point is a building block. So in my obedience program, I start off introduction to casting while they're in obedience with place mm-hmm. boards going back and forth. I do multiple place boards, and I'll do overs and backs with the place boards. Not so much the term over or back, but place and kind of,
you're,
know,
pointing
my
there.
Body language. Right. Yeah. So I think that they, you know, that is a building block, and they, whenever it comes time to do, T, you know, or directional casting, they've already kind of had a little abbreviation, a little glimpse at that along the way. Mm-hmm.
You know, formalizing it with puppies can definitely help set that foundation to, you know, there's something here, go this way.
Right. I think it's also important to kind of look at yourself too through this blind running process and have somebody kind of evaluate if this is your first time going through it, how you could be better too, and take that constructive criticism or take the pointers as they come, because we may see somebody running blinds, or we may watch videos of people running blinds and think that we're look just like them, but I promise you we don't, at least not in the beginning.
Oh, so, yeah.
You got to take the feedback. And I know that I've taken feedback, you know, moving too fast with a faster dog, or not standing in the exact same way every time I run a blind, or just having different movements and not being consistent. So I think that we have to self-reflect a little bit and how we look to the dog, and try to keep it as military-esque or as consistent as you can, to where your dog knows exactly what you're asking, because it looks the same every time.
Yeah. And that's a good, you know, when you're running blinds, that's where you kind of transition from training a dog to handling a dog. You know, there's a difference between those two things. And being able to handle a dog, that there's a lot of that consistency you're talking about, but that's where there's a lot of value in finding a pro with a lot of experience to kind of help you through things. Definitely make sure your programs align. But, you know, like you said, maybe if you're giving a fast dog a fast cast, like you're just shooting your hand up there, that dog might be tempted to start auto casting because they're just so on edge, and you're just twitching a cast in the, and that's not what they need. Maybe you need to be a little with how you give your casts. That's not something you're going to think about unless somebody brings it up to you. Hey man, you're blowing your hand up there, and it's just, you know, really spastic. Try to calm down and, you know, give smooth cast. That way that dog isn't picking up that energy of, okay, let's go.
Well, there's that. And then there's also, like, you know, just an interruption, or just have them sit there a little while to gather themselves. If that's the fast dog. And, you know, I think like so many people with the fast dogs might let their dog kind of train them in a sense to where, you know, their dog's turning and looking at them, and we're giving a cast as quick as I can because we're kind of picking up on their momentum. And hey, maybe if I let them set the tone, or if I don't read their tone and give them the cast, they might just take off before I give it to
them. And so it's almost like you're trying to fabricate a successful rep. And that's like, you know, maybe if your dog, you know, you hit a whistle sit and your dog's kind of shading one way, like your dog kind of anticipates, okay, he's going to give me a left back here. You know, there's a 50-50 chance of what cast you're going to give when you're working pile work. It's either going to be a right back or a left back. And your dog's going to start to pick up on that. You hit a whistle sit, right back, and might shade a little bit. Well, we don't want to cheat the drill and always give them a right back and let them be, you know, right in that. Sometimes we need to challenge them a little bit and say, okay, you think I'm going to send you right, I'm going to send you left. And if you go right, that's an opportunity to train. And so that like you
said, right,
you know, you're hitting a whistle sit and almost immediately giving that dog a cast. Maybe that dog does need to marinate on that sit a little bit to, you know, to kind of gather what's about to happen and really digest what your cast is going to be. And that's like the differences between working with the faster dog that has all that drive out the box. And, you know, if you're working with a slower dog that you're building drive, you have a lot of opportunity to build drive in a dog during pile work. And maybe that's the dog you need to give fast, jerky. Well, not jerky, but maybe that's a dog that you need to go a little bit faster with. Maybe that's not a dog you need to tweet and let it sit there and marinate. Okay, we're going to tweet. You're looking at me. Here's a cast. You know, build that momentum. Keep that drive building with them.
Right. Yep. I think, you know, some dogs can be fast at certain things and slow it up at other things, especially through obedience. If it starts getting boring, you know, you just probably need to move a little faster. So you're trying to, you know, kind of build up this momentum along the way. But when you get a little too much momentum, you might want to slow down a little bit.
And, you know, building momentum too, you know, that's sometimes where we get caught up in looking for perfection too. And like you said, that then it becomes boring. Then they look for, you know, a way to make it different for themselves. And that might not be what you're trying to get out of that drill. You know, maybe that starts flaring issues, or maybe that starts a dog that blows awful.
Oh, well, there you get a loopy sit in there, and you have to fix that. And, you know, add
more, or you hit a whistle sit, and the dog doesn't face you. I've seen that a couple of times. I haven't had that personally happen to me, but I've seen somebody hit a whistle sit, and the dog's still facing the pile, and it's like, well, I did what you told me to, but you know.
Oh yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, that like I said, that's one of those things that you can iron out on a different part of the yard and work through obedience stuff. When I say sit, you know, I want you to face me. There's a reason I'm telling you to sit, and it's so I can give you a cast and we can work.
Right. I will say a little drill that I used. I actually heard it on a podcast myself, but to kind of help with that whistle sit and develop it to where they do turn and look at you, keep a bumper or a tennis ball in your pocket. And whenever they turn and look at you, you toss it out for them and give them a cast. That kind of gives them more, hey, this guy's not stopping me en route to whatever. It's like, hey, this guy's stopping me because he's about to do something really awesome, throw something.
Or it doesn't even have to be throwing it. Some dogs just, if you're holding a tennis ball or you're holding a bright white bumper, they're going to look at you. It doesn't matter where you try to walk, that dog is not going to take its eyes off of you because they love a bumper so much. That's, you know, now you have their attention. Now I can give you a cast. Maybe it might be with the bumper, or it might be with the hand that's not holding the bumper, and the bumper is just a way to get you to look at me. You know, there's a lot of different tools that you develop through working through your program, through working at different retriever clubs or working with different pros. So, you know, we always harp on it, but I don't think there's any better resource to you than other people. Just try not to get a little too mixed up in your program.
Right. Well, I think we've covered mostly everything that we intended to talk about here. You know, kind of the end works of force fetch up to T, reverse T, and kind of leaving it to pattern blinds as being the, you know, the transition into more complicated blinds after that. Anything else you wanted to talk about?
I think that, I think I'm about out of hot air for this episode, but you know, it's a fun topic to talk about. You know, there's having a dog that can take casts and is a team player and says, okay, I don't know where it is. You do. Tell me where to go, boss. You know, it's neat. And I think that's one of those things that even somebody who's not into gun dogs, if they watch somebody sit there in an open field and they're able to cast their dog, that's just cool to watch. You know, I've had a lot of people text me. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
Hey, you know, I went to this tower shoot this past weekend, and there's, you know, they had some dogs there that were just insane. I was like, oh yeah, what were they doing? They're like, well, you know, they, you know, the person would blow the whistle and they just direction, the dog would go that direction. And, you know,
it's cool, man. I still think it's cool to, you know, even to just to have your dog look at you when you blow the whistle and look for you, mm-hmm. look to you for direction.
I had a really good buddy of mine, and I got to do some duck hunting with him this past year. But, you know, he trained dogs for a while, but he got into it because he used to work on a golf course. And he was out there one, you know, I think it was like, he said it was a rainy day. He was out there cleaning out some drains, and he just saw a guy up on the tee pad in a white jacket, and he just heard a whistle start going off, and he was looking around, and he eventually saw a dog like 250 yards away, and this guy in the white jacket was just hitting a whistle and, you know, sticking his arm up, and the dog would go that direction. And he's like, man, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And so my buddy went up and talked to the guy and figured out what he's doing is, you know, blind retrieve work, casting drills. And he was like, teach me. You know, it really is one of those things that anybody can appreciate, whether you're a gun dog guy or not, a dog that can take that level of direction from somebody. It's just like obedience on steroids.
You almost said crack, didn't you?
Well, where are the puppies in their training? Are they getting ready to start any of this?
Oh, puppies, yeah, they're going through fetch program right now. They've been through obedience with, you know, we did the treat training. We do the clicker and treat training. We are doing some leash work now, too. I try to not do too much of the same stuff every day. I try to change it up, you know, throughout the day. Yeah, we're doing some leash heel work and some fetch stuff, and we are getting ready for, you know, I wouldn't say big dog stuff, but we're getting ready for started. You know, we had some pretty cold weather here recently, but, you know, one of the things that we kind of got on our list is some water work coming up pretty soon. So, you know, just wanted to warm up a little bit before we delve off into that too much. They've been in some water. They've been in some cold water. You know, Delta's even broke ice when we went to Oklahoma, not by request, but by her choice. I don't think she's, you know, going to be having any issues whenever we get to that. Enzo, he's not, you know, as far as the cold water goes, he hasn't really tried it out yet, and I haven't really pushed him to either. So I plan on kind of asking him to do it a little more when it warms up a little bit. I don't want to precipitate any mm-hmm. issues if he were to have any. That's it, man. Yeah.
We always appreciate all of you guys listening. We hope if you're getting ready to get into blind work with your puppy, or you're coming out of force fetch and you're looking to start this process, we hope this episode shed some light on things, maybe gave you some information you didn't have before. You know, even if you've been running blinds for, you know, 15 dogs, maybe it gave you a little bit to chew on. And I thank you all for sticking with us and listen to this podcast. Hope it was entertaining for you. Hope you're able to take away some information from it. And we always will look forward to having you guys tune in for our next episode.